Veterinary Advice on Talk About with Danny the Vet. Brought to you by Pet Mania, Manor West Retail Park, Tralee.
Now, I'm delighted to welcome Danny O'Sullivan from the All Care Veterinary Practice, who joins us in our Killarney studio. You're very welcome, Danny.
Thank you.
Now, Danny, it would be remiss of us to have a veterinary slot, I think, the week that's in it, without making some reference and having some discussion about the horrific story that emerged in Ballyneety earlier this week, where a very young woman, only 23 years old, was killed by one of her own dogs. And I think there's been another story about an attack by a pit bull terrier since then. What do you make of it all, Danny? I mean, you must have come across these dangerous breeds from time to time over the years.
Yes, I suppose we do from time to time, yes. Not so much. I haven't actually met too many of them in our practice, but it is a serious issue. And I do know that with the XL bullies, I think, if I'm right, about 50% of the deaths in the UK of people from dog attacks have been a specific breed. So I know that in the UK, at the start of this year, XL bullies were actually banned. And this may pose a problem in Ireland, in that if we do not respond in some way, it's possible that you may have some of these dogs being sold to people in Ireland, or you might have migration of the animals or the people owning these animals to Ireland. So it's an important thing that we actually do address it. Now, there are several ways of addressing it. One is the outright ban, which the UK opted for. In Germany and Spain, they have a different policy, and it refers to large dogs, not just that particular breed, but others as well. And the owners there have to get a certification, a specific certification, in order to own them. And this would involve behaviour, training and management. And this could be adopted. The Kennel Club already have a good citizen course. So that would be an option that any person owning one of these dog breeds would have to undergo the special training, because I think education is hugely important. And in a lot of the cases, as far as I'm aware, where these deaths have occurred, there was a degree of the owners of the dogs weren't properly trained or weren't fully aware of what they need to do. The other thing is that whatever policy we adopt in this country, we're going to have to increase the level of enforcement. At the moment, only one third of owners have dog licenses, so we're not great on the... We're good on legislation, but we're not great on enforcement. And if more people paid for the license for their dogs, and the money could be used to take on more dog wardens to increase the level of enforcement. But whatever we bring in, we need to enforce it. Like, for instance, all dogs now are supposed to be microchipped. And in fairness, a lot of them are. But we would still, in the practice, and these are not dangerous breeds or whatever, but we would find dogs being dropped into us, wandering around the place, and we go looking for the microchip, and in a number of cases there will be none. Or in other cases, what's nearly sadder really is that there will be a microchip, but when we actually go online to check it, it's the original breeder of the dog as a puppy that'll be down as the owner, and that's no use to us because they have no idea of where the dogs have gone or whatever. So we do need to license it. The other thing which is a possibility, but it would require, I don't think it can be adopted quickly, is that you would have a specific license for these breeders of these type of dogs. And I'm not just saying XL bullies, there are a number of other breeds as well.
The dangerous breeds, as we call them.
The dangerous breeds.
Yeah.
So, and you would have a specific license, and the owners then would have to be registered, and they would have to neuter the dogs, and they would have to undergo the training. So, that is a possibility, because, basically any, and I mean, the argument we would hear is that a lot of people that would own maybe certain breeds, if they're properly trained and if the owners are fully educated, there's no issue. But the problem, why these large breeds are a particular issue, is that if they do attack, it's just their sheer size, they can do a lot more damage, you know, whereas if you have some of the smaller breeds that aren't properly trained, okay, they can cause a bit of damage, but they can't actually, well, I suppose they're unlikely to kill you, whereas it does happen with these big breeds. So I would say whatever system we adopt, it's going to have to be enforced properly. And I think that's a big part of it.
Danny, do I get the impression from you that you wouldn't be in favour of going down the UK route and bringing in an all-out ban on that particular breed, the XL Bully?
Until such, in theory, yes. But the problem is that, you know, in order to set up the training and the certification, that's not going to happen overnight. And basically, you know, maybe a ban would be appropriate until such time as there is another program in place, you know, like they have in Germany and Spain or whatever. But there's no point in bringing in any legislation in this country if it's not enforced. And, you know, a third of people with dog licenses, that tells you where we're at the moment. Now, the other thing is that, you know, it is slightly more urgent now, in that the fact that they have banned it in the UK, and maybe we're leaving ourselves open to, maybe or maybe not, I don't know the figures, I have no figures to back it up, but we might be leaving ourselves open to an influx of these breeds. We don't have a lot of XL bullies in this country. I haven't encountered any, to be honest. But, you know, there is a danger that by banning it in the UK, that they may move locally, which is, this is probably the nearest area for them to go to. So I do think that we need to take some sort of action. And I know that at the moment in the Dáil, that, you know, with McEntee and a few others, that, you know, that they are investigating this and they are taking it seriously. But it does need to be taken seriously. But I still think that the whole area of education, licensing, enforcement, we need to step up on all of those as well.
Just one final brief point about this, Danny, and we'll move on to questions then. I think what shocked most people about that particular case in Ballyneety earlier in the week was that the dogs, I think there was two dogs involved in the attack, is that they turned on their owner who'd had them for years and who treated them like her babies. But I guess that really points out that with certain breeds of dogs, you know, no matter how good they are, how much you love them, they still have that instinct within them that in certain circumstances they can turn on even the hand that feeds them.
That is true. And also that's why, you know, often on Radio Kerry there we'll get questions about, you know, I have a new baby in the house or a new child, and is it safe if, you know, if they're alone with my dog? And my answer is always no, because, okay, you know, this goes to handling and, you know, kids, until they're taught how to handle animals, they can sort of be rough with you know, and if you have a small little dog, like say, most Labradors are pretty gentle, they'll put up with it. But, you know, if they grab one of these dogs by the tail, or even a smaller dog that has got a little bit of a temper, it can be a different story. So I would say that, you know, young kids should never be left alone with pets. And I do think that the whole training area, I think that owners, you know, like if you buy a car, you have to have a driving license. I think that there's a lot to be said for more education and licensing of specific breeds, particularly what we would consider the bigger breeds or the more dangerous breeds. So I think it's a complex issue.
It is, to be sure, absolutely. Well, look, thank you for explaining all that to us in plain man's language, if you like, Danny, because I know that a lot of people are shocked by the events of the past week. We'll move on from that, though, and just to remind the listeners that if they have any queries for Danny, it doesn't have to be just about dogs, about any of your pets, you can text them in on 083 300 3300. We'll start with this one from a texter who says, is it a big deal to remove a toenail from a dog? Any idea how much it would cost, roughly?
Yeah, it depends. Now, I know that's a kind of a cop-out answer, really. But, If a toenail, if it's just the nail that's affected, they often come off of their own accord and they will regrow. But the problem is that sometimes it's actually onto the digit and you can have the digit broken as well. And that's why sometimes you need to take an x-ray there. And if the digit, if the bone below it is broken and you just take it off, that bone is actually exposed and you can get an osteomyelitis or an infection or whatever. So it depends entirely, and that's why the cost will vary depending on if it's removing the whole nail. You're actually removing it, like if you're removing the digit, that's a bigger job, and obviously full anaesthetic and everything that goes with it. So it depends. So I'd say maybe best thing to do there is just go to the vet and they'll be able to tell you most likely what it needs.
Now, this next one is from, again, a texter who wants to know, what is the best home remedy for treating itchy feet in a cavachon?
Okay, cavachons, again, basically a very common cause of itchy feet. It's often the first sign of a condition called atopy. And atopy is an allergy to environmental allergens, and it can be to grass or stuff like that in the feet, but it can also be dust mites or pollen or various things. So if it's, and generally that will be seen, they will first be seen under 3 years of age. So if you have a dog that's showing itchy feet and they're coming up to 2 or 3 years of age, atopy is much more likely. And you know, and that it doesn't actually, and also even things like a flea bite can respond, like it doesn't actually mean that it's the feet themselves that are the problem. That tends to be an area that's particularly itchy if they have an allergy. And what tends to happen then is they start licking at their feet. And then the next thing that happens then is the moisture from the saliva on the feet and the dampness and the heat, and you get an infection. And you can get a bacterial infection in the feet, or you can get Malassezia, which is a yeast type infection. And that's treated a bit in humans like athlete's foot. So even that it seems like a minor thing, itchy feet are often an indication, and particularly cavachons, those small breeds, bichons, they're particularly prone to it. So there may be a slightly bigger problem than they think there.
Okay, very good. We'll take a quick break at this point, Danny. We have more queries for you. And again, to remind people of our main phone line, if you would prefer to phone through your question. Siobhan is taking the calls today. It's 066 7123666 if you have a query for Danny, or indeed if you have a comment for another topic on the show this afternoon. It is just coming up to a 2:15. You're listening to Friday's Talk About with me, Deirdre Walsh. More with Danny the Vet after these.
Veterinary advice on Talk About with Danny the Vet. Brought to you by Pet Mania, Manor West Retail Park, Tralee.
Now, back to some more questions for Danny. And this one is not dissimilar to the previous one we asked you, Danny. It's from a listener who says, my dog is licking her front leg. The hair has gone off it and it's red. Any advice, please? She's over 3 years old but still acts like a puppy.
Yeah, a lot of them do, thankfully. Basically, that's most likely called a lick pyoderma, which means it started off as itchy. The dog started licking at it, and then it becomes infected. And the reason that it's red is it's actually got infected. So there'll be two parts to the treatment of this. One will be, unfortunately, the owners hate this, an Elizabethan collar. That's a big plastic collar, so the dog can't lick at it, and every owner hates those. That's actually, they never mind with the injections and the antibiotics and the anti-inflammatories. They never have a problem with that, but they always have an issue, and they said, God, the dog looks at me there as if to say, why did I do this? So basically, there is one thing I'd say, when you do put on, that's the only way you can break them from licking at it. Because if you imagine, like, people that bite at their nails, you know, maybe that's another case for an Elizabethan collar. But anyway, that's the answer to that. Now, when you are putting on an Elizabethan collar, the most common question we get is, can I take it off when he's with me? Or can I take it off when they're eating? And the best answer is no. And the reason for that is, if you put on a collar, the dogs go ballistic for about an hour and a half. They start rolling over on their back, banging into walls, turning upside down. But they get used to it. And then they say, oh God, they just put up with it. And if you take it off to give them food or when you're around, that hour and a half of torture starts again when you put it back on, and it goes on again the following day. So you're best to bite the bullet, leave it on until the thing is healed, follow your vet's direction, and just it's for the good of the animal. You have to be cool to be kind sometimes.
Put up with the sulks from the dog.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Short-term pain, long-term pain.
Ignore the nasty stares you get.
Now, this next one is from the owner of an 8-year-old Chihuahua Yorkie cross that's been diagnosed with heart valve disease. He's on heart and fluid pills. Could he have an operation? Is there anything more that can be done for him? And this listener says, please help. I'm very upset. He's my whole world.
Okay, that's something now I can talk quite a bit about. In humans, heart mitral valve disease is treated surgically, and basically what happens is the valve fails or whatever, and there's a little break there, and they go in and they stitch it, and they actually have done some in dogs and cats. The operation costs about $25,000. That's for a start, and it's only about 50% success rate. So basically, the meds are the way to go. But the good news is that they do quite well. I mean, basically, what happens with the valvular disease is that it's the mitral valve, and basically, it's the heart is like a pump with non-return valves, and if one valve is leaky, some of that blood builds up behind and not enough is going forwards, and that's why you get fluid build up, and the drugs actually get the heart to slow down a bit more effectively and get rid of the fluid, and they can live for quite a long time. That type of heart disease is quite treatable, and in the last 10 or 15 years the drugs have come on so much that it's even better results now than we used to have in the past.
What about a cat next, Danny? This listener says, a stray cat wandered into our house and has had kittens. We don't know where the kittens are or even if they're alive, but the cat is eating a lot and it's now 8 to 9 weeks since she had the kittens. Should we get her neutered now?
Yes, you can get them neutered basically straight away, 3 weeks, 4 weeks after they've had the kittens. And the reason I say that is that if you don't get her neutered now, and especially this time of the year, she's going to come back in heat and there'll be another batch of kittens. So, yes. So, basically, we would recommend this time of the year, cats come in, they're all coming into heat, and they actually stay in heat until they're pregnant, different to dogs. Dogs come in heat twice a year, roughly, whereas cats are basically in heat until pregnant. So, and they can get pregnant from 5, 6 months of age on. So go ahead and neuter her straight away.
Now, we're still on cats. A listener says, our cat Billy Bob seems to be...
Billy Bob Thornton.
Billy Bob, I love it. Seems to be sneezing a lot more in fine weather. Could Billy Bob have hay fever?
Yeah, I would say there's definitely a degree of that. Asthma is quite common in cats. About, you know, I think 1 in 10 or 1 in 12 can actually have it. And it can actually, it often causes coughing. If you hear a cat coughing, the most likely cause is asthma. If a cat is sneezing, it could be a hay fever type thing, or it could be a respiratory tract infection. They're both are very, very common in cats. But like, people generally start laughing when I tell them their cat has asthma. I actually have had quite a few successes with people giving up smoking. They didn't do it for their own health, but the cats would get an asthma attack when the owner was smoking in their room. And people have given up the smoking for the sake of their cats, not for the sake of their own health. So figure that one out.
Oh my God, that's unbelievable. Imagine that you would do it for the cat if not for yourself.
Yeah, I've seen it on a number of occasions, not just once or twice.
So the cats are kind of getting secondary smoke into their lungs.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, they're like your bartender.
My goodness, that's incredible. Now, this next one, I'm always in awe, Danny, of the different crossbreeds and what they're called. This next question is about a Sherpa Doodle. What on earth is that?
Well, a poodle is the doodle part of it. A shepherd could be a shepherd, I presume.
Oh, a sherpa doodle. Okay.
Yeah. I'm only guessing on that now. The doodle part, I'm fairly confident of, but the sherpa, I'm guessing it.
A sherpa doodle.
And so what they do is generally take part of the name of each breed.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's a new one on me. Anyway.
Well, very popular are labradoodles. We're seeing an awful lot of those.
They're beautiful.
They make lovely pets.
Great pets.
Yeah.
Now, this sherpa doodle pup is 6 months old and is a therapy dog, but the problem is she has a black spot on her tongue and our listener is worried about it.
I would say most likely nothing to worry about. And basically they can have all sorts of colours on their tongue. And if there's no drooling, if it's not raised, if the dog is eating fine and healthy otherwise, it's just pigment. And that's quite common. So unless there's drooling or other symptoms, nothing to worry about.
Okay, this is slightly unusual, Danny. I'm not even sure if it's in your area of expertise, but I'll put it to you anyway.
I'll try and field it anyway.
Try and field it anyway. A caller says she's put out rat poison boxes, but the birds are getting into it and eating the poison. And she found one bird dead beside the box. She said she asked in the shop where she bought the poison why the birds are eating it. And they told her that they shouldn't eat it. She says putting the boxes out by night is not a solution, as she has seen the rats going into the box by day. And she's looking for advice. So she's trying to kill rats, but she's killing birds accidentally.
Yeah, no, birds will eat it. Because basically, if a food or a poison is to be palatable for rats, it's palatable to every other
creature
as well. Mm. And the most we commonly get that with dogs getting poisoned by bait that's put down for the vermin. So yeah, they will do it. And the only thing you can do in a situation like that is rats and mice tend to go into a little dark corner, so putting it in something like a long pipe that they can walk through, you know, put it midways or whatever, so that the birds are unlikely to get at it, but birds will be poisoned by rat bait.
Oh dear, well it sounds like a job for Rentokil, I reckon.
Maybe so, yeah.
Yeah, she might need to go further with that one. Danny, we're going to leave it there, but thank you as always for answering all those questions for us. Have a great weekend.